So Joe, if we can, I'm going to play this video. For anybody that's not quite sure what the Mike Gundy birthday means.
And then you want to write articles about guys that don't do things right and downgrade them, the ones that do make plays. Are you kidding me? Where are we at in society today? Come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40. I'm not a kid. Write something about me or our coaches. Don't write about a kid that does everything right, that's heart's broken, and then say that the coaches said he was scared. That ain't true. And then to say that we made that decision because Donovan Woods, because he threatened to transfer, that's not true. So get your facts straight. And I hope someday you have a child and somebody downgrades them and belittles them and you have to look them in the eye and say, you know what? It's okay. They're supposed to be mature adults, but they're really not. Who's the kid here? Who's the kid here? Are you kidding me?
All right, so had to share that. I think, Joe, that's probably going to be on a loop now on my show. That might just be on the pre-recorded voice setting. So that might go into the title page there. I'm a man, I'm 40. So, yeah, the Mike Gundy birthday, if I ever reference that, 40 years old. Yeah, so that's probably going on replay on the loop here. Obviously, too. Oh, and something, too, I said, you know, it's another trip around the sun, whatever, but you know, I'm probably going to be waking up now with aches and pains that I never experienced before, right? And yelling at kids to get off my lawn and stuff like that. So, yeah, comes with the territory. But, yeah, to catch up a little bit with basketball specifically, because, you know, we're kind of right in the heart now of the NBA Finals. We have a really, really solid series. Last night was game 4 in Milwaukee. The Suns started up 2-0 in the series. Milwaukee won game 3. And then last night was kind of back and forth for a while. The Suns actually held a 7-point lead in the fourth quarter. But the Bucks ended up coming out last night with a 109-103 victory. Chris Middleton scored the final 10 points of the game for the Bucks. So, you know, to edge out the Suns there, that game really could have gone either way. And a 3-1 deficit is, you know, very, very hard to overcome. The only team, obviously, that we know has done that was the Cavs in 2016. So now, basically, we turn the page. It's a best of 3 series. Game 5 is going to be in Phoenix on Saturday night. And again, to recap a little bit last night, Chris Middleton scored 40 points. Giannis scored 26 as they combined for 66 of Milwaukee's 109 points. So just an awesome night for the two of them. Phoenix actually shot 51% from the field, but still lost. But Milwaukee only shot 40% and still won. That is because Milwaukee had 34 more opportunities. That's based on turnovers. That's based on second chance opportunities, offensive rebounds, things like that, 50-50 balls. So Milwaukee just really, really took advantage of extra opportunities and came out with a huge win. Can't say it's a must win, but close to a must win game as possible. For the Suns, Devin Booker scored 42 points last night. He basically didn't play a whole lot of the fourth quarter. With foul trouble, we'll get into a little bit of, you know, sort of a ghost non-call that the referees made last night. They sort of just blew one, just sort of let it go, which would have knocked Devin Booker out of the game way earlier, probably about the 4-minute mark, and they just sort of let that one pass. But another thing that I noticed last night, I don't know if anybody else did, was Chris Paul just did not seem to be himself. You know, he's pretty much outside of Devin Booker. You know, he's got to score 20 a night, at least for the Suns to win. And, you know, you could just tell he was struggling. It almost looked like a hand injury that he has. So Chris Paul has been known to sort of get close, but not over the hump. They finally got to the finals before he was chasing the conference finals. Now, obviously, he's chasing an NBA title. So, you know, those whispers start creeping in of, hey, can can Chris Paul do it, or is he gonna, you know, choke or whatever it might be. So hopefully for him, he's healthy and they can bounce back on Saturday night, because with a healthy Chris Paul, with a healthy Giannis, you know, both of those teams really have made for a really, really excellent series so far. I want to point out Giannis and what he's doing right now, because if you're not a traditional basketball fan, and I think to watch the finals, you don't have to be, you know, you don't have to be knee deep in the NBA to understand what's going on and to appreciate what Giannis is doing. Giannis is averaging right now through four games, 32.3 points, 14 rebounds, and 5.5 assists a game. So if you add that up, that adds up to 51.8 total points, rebounds, assists. Bill Simmons, who is one of the best basketball analysts out there, has this thing called, he calls it the 42-point club. And LeBron is sort of one of the main people that have done it. I think he's been in that 42 club six different times, but there's only a handful of other guys to ever even average 42 points, rebounds, and assists together. Giannis right now is averaging 51.8, which I'll tell you about how close that is to LeBron in 2018 in just a couple minutes here. But I just thought that was worth noting, because what he's doing is really historic. And, you know, just an unbelievable effort so far. I'm going to put up a few images here. So the first image I'm going to show you happened about the 1 minute and 15 second mark. This, if the Bucks win this series, this is going to be probably the defining moment of the series. The Suns had an alley-oop opportunity, and it looked like it was, you know, an easy bucket for the Suns. But Giannis, who had his back completely turned to the play, came up and just absolutely denied this alley-oop opportunity to DeAndre Ayton, who, by the way, is 7'1", and just absolutely denied him. And that, if he would have converted that, that would have tied the game. So, again, just an unbelievable attempt. I want to compare that to the LeBron block of 2016. A lot of people last night were like, oh, this is the most unbelievable block I've ever seen. Well, I say, well, just hit the rewind button about 5 years. To me, this has got to be the most impressive because of the situation. Game seven, that would have actually put the Warriors on top with about a minute and 50 seconds left. So, you know, each play can be awesome on its own. It doesn't have to be put up against each other, but I just thought that was worth mentioning as well. A couple other notes from the game last night. Milwaukee was plus 12 in the fourth quarter, outscoring the Suns 33-21. As I had mentioned, Phoenix had that game in hand for a while and just couldn't put it away.
Can I interject something real quick? Because I'm always the silly one. So, yeah. So in 15 or 20 years from now, when the average height of a basketball player is 8'4", do they raise these buckets so it's not quite so easy to like block shots?
I mean, huge. I have heard that before of them talking about raising. I think, you know, if the average height is whatever, you know, you still got to put the ball in the rim. So you're going to have guys going against you that can defend that sort of thing. So, and the NBA game has really shifted outside in the 3-point line. These two teams are a little bit unique where they kind of, you know, they don't shoot the three as great as other teams do.
But if you take like your Shaq and you just clog up the thing, he could just basically deflect anything that's happening. Well, that'd make for stupid NBA, basketball.
Well, right? The NBA though has a legal defense, so you can play zone, but your big guy can only be in the paint for up to 3 seconds unless he's actively guarding someone. So if you're spreading everybody out, you got to pull those big guys out who might not be able to cover the 3-point line and then get back to rebound. So that's why I think the game has changed a little bit. And what'd you say? 8'4"?
Yeah.
I don't think we're getting there for a while. So,
but Spud Webb, no chance. Muggsy Bogues, no chance.
Right. I know, but you look at some of these guys though, some of the best players, Chris Paul is not a big dude, you know, Devin Booker, you know, he's 6'4", but not huge. Drew Holiday, you know, average size guy. But you're right, though. There's some freakishly, like Giannis. I mean, the guy is just an absolute freak. And that's why, the Greek freak, you know? So I'll tell you what. Let's get into what I was mentioning earlier with LeBron. So Giannis, 32.3 points, 14 rebounds, 5.5 assists. That adds up to 51.8 total. LeBron, to compare it, LeBron in 2018, 34 points, 10 rebounds, 8.5 assists, which adds up to 52.5, which by my count was the highest in history in the finals. So again, the 42 club, you know, that they're exceeding that by 10, either 10 points, rebounds, and assists combined, which is just unheard of. So pretty awesome. So I'm going to just go through, because these teams' rosters, and again, I want to try to break this down just for the casual NBA fan, because we're not going to go through the 15th guy on the list. We're just going to go kind of who the main guys are playing, and I just want to talk about a few of them, because basically the Suns and the Bucks, it's a three-man team for each, you know, with some supporting roles. So Chris Paul, let's start with the Suns. Chris Paul. Everybody knows Chris Paul from the State Farm commercials, just from his career and what he's done. But 21 points, 8 rebounds, 3 assists. Obviously, the point guard for the Suns, as I mentioned, might have a hand injury. Hopefully, he's on the mend and can finish the series off strong. He is a vital contributor for Suns. Kind of just makes it go. Devin Booker, probably... Oh, well, definitely the most prolific scorer on the team. 27.5 points, 4 rebounds, 3 assists. And he last night broke the NBA record for most playoff points in his first NBA playoffs. He's been around the league for a while. So this being his first playoffs, you know, he's sort of a veteran in that sense. But he scored 532 points so far in 20 games for the Suns, which that passed Rick Barry, Hall of Famer, and Dr. J. And then the Suns, I'd say they're arguably their third most important player, DeAndre Ayton, who we showed earlier in with that block, who was blocked by Giannis. He is averaging 14 points, 14 rebounds, and 2 assists. He is just... he's emerging as a very, very talented player, former number one overall pick in the draft a few years back, in the same draft as Luka, in the same draft as Trae Young, a few others I might be leaving out there. But those three are the most important players for the Suns: Chris Paul, Devin Booker, DeAndre Ayton. Now, to fill out the rest of their starting lineup, you got Jay Crowder, who's kind of that guy. You know, he kind of gets under your skin. He kind of flops a little bit. Good defender, can hit the three. Just kind of, you know, can, like I said, can frustrate you, can get under your skin. And then to round out their starting lineup, they got Mikal Bridges out of Villanova, younger guy. Can play the wing, decent defender, decent scorer, kind of just knows his role on that team. And then coming off the bench, they basically just have two guys. They kind of added a third into the mix last night, both by the name of Cam Johnson, Cam Payne. And then they actually have a guy named Torrey Craig, who started the year with Milwaukee, which is interesting. And then they lost a guy, Dario Saric, to an ACL in game one. So that's kind of a look at the Suns' main impact players and guys to look for when you get into watching the game on Saturday. For the Bucks, we all know their main guy is Giannis, former two-time MVP. I've mentioned his stats several times already on the broadcast. Their next main guy, Chris Middleton, just a phenomenal wing. Kind of a combo between a shooting guard and a small forward, but right now he's averaging almost 25 points a game, 6.5 rebounds and 5.5 assists per game. So he's really doing it all for them. And like I mentioned, he scored the final 10 points for the Bucks last night. And then Drew Holiday, their point guard, great defender. We don't talk enough about defense and how important that is, but Drew Holiday is just an absolute dynamite defender. He's averaging 15 points, 6 rebounds, and 8 assists per game. So the those are the main three guys for the Bucks. You add in PJ Tucker, who, you know, he's basically the Jay Crowder of their team, kind of the guy that gets under your skin, plays good defense, can hit a three every now and then. You can add Brooke Lopez to that list, who can, he's basically a 7'1" huge big dude, but he can step outside and hit a three. And then they got a couple guys that can come off the bench and hurt you a little bit. Pat Connaughton, nice 3-point shooter. Bobby Portis has sort of become a Milwaukee favorite. Just kind of an energy guy. They had lost someone named Dante DiVincenzo, also from Villanova, earlier in the year, and he's out right now. So Milwaukee basically only goes 7 deep. Phoenix, pretty much the same. So you're playing, a lot of guys are playing 40 plus minutes, but you know, you're to the final three games, you know, two, maybe three games of the season. So those guys, and they're getting a couple days rest in between games. So really no excuse to be tired. Easy for me to say not playing, but those guys, this is what it's all about. This is why you play the game. So, we'll see. I still like the Bucks to, or I'm sorry, I still like Phoenix to win the series, because I think the Bucks are not a great free throw shooting team, especially Giannis down the stretch. Whereas I think on the opposite side of the coin, Phoenix will win those close games because of their free throw shooting. Now Milwaukee has more experience, Phoenix not quite as much. So we'll kind of see how that plays out, but I still like Phoenix. I said before the series started, I like Phoenix in 6 games. So we know at minimum it's going 6 games, possibly 7. We'll see how that plays out. Okay. Shifting gears, still with basketball, but I got to bring this up because, like I said, I was down in Florida. I kind of didn't even put any thought into this, but USA basketball, you know, they're prepping for the Olympics. The Olympics start in about 8 days from now in Tokyo. We'll get into that in a little bit. But last night, the USA basketball team, men's basketball team, did beat Argentina 108-80, which, you know, is kind of what you expect from the USA men's basketball team. We've been dominant. They've been 54-2 in exhibition games since, I believe, 1992. So, which made this a huge surprise when they lost their first 2 exhibition games of this kind of prep period before the Olympics. They lost to Nigeria, who was coached by former Cavs coach Mike Brown. And so there are some NBA guys on that team, but literally no one I had ever heard of that had ever made any kind of impact. So Nigeria beat USA 90-87, which was an absolutely huge impact, huge upset. You know, there's going to be kids from Nigeria we hear of in, you know, 15 years that are playing in the NBA that reference this game, I think. But I just thought that was kind of a cool story, obviously not for the US, but kind of a cool story for Nigeria basketball. And then the next game after that, or the game right around that, was USA also lost 91-83 to Australia. That team features Patty Mills, who I don't even know is in the NBA anymore. Joe Ingles, who is a really nice shooter, but that's basically all he can do. And our old friend, Matthew Dellavedova, who plays on that team as well. So those were literally about the only guys I knew on the team on the Australian roster. So for the USA to lose by 8 points to Australia, that's a huge upset. So again, exhibition technically doesn't count, but you know, in my eyes it does, because you're playing with all NBA players, and you should maybe not beat these teams by 20, but you should be winning handily. So the USA roster looks like this. So they got Bradley Beal, all-star. Zach LaVine, all-star. Damian Lillard, arguably one of the top 3 point guards in the league. Kevin Durant, arguably the best player in the league. Jeremy Grant, becoming a nice player. Jason Tatum, you know, an emerging superstar. Kevin Love, kind of passed his time, but can still, you know, put the ball in the hoop and grab some rebounds for you. Bam Adebayo, who is a really solid defender, can play a little bit for Miami. And then Draymond Green, who we know Draymond Green from our Golden State days. This team will add three guys to the roster from the finals: Chris Middleton, Drew Holiday, and Devin Booker. As I said, after the finals is over, so we'll see if that that should obviously help their depth, help their impact impact on the scoring end. Bradley Beal, I did just see, went into COVID protocol, so who knows how that'll go. And they will open pool play in the Olympics in Tokyo. Their pool, you know, they sort of play round robin style, is U.S., France, Iran, and the Czech Republic. They begin on July 25th. So I think that game, it's kind of cool for us because we can watch that game. I think it's at 8 a.m. for us. So it's kind of neat to be able to like turn on the TV in a random July and
catch basketball, you know, first thing in the morning.
Yeah, see a little bit of basketball.
What did Kevin Love do? I got to know. There's got to be a story. He's like a fan favorite. Like what? How do he rub you?
He's done a couple things for the Cavs. First of all, he can play for Team USA, and you know, there were 72 regular season games this past year. I think he played in like 25. And then they played one specific game against the Toronto Raptors, and there was one specific play. They were getting beat pretty good, the Cavs were, and he just took the ball, and I don't know if he was frustrated at a call, frustrated that the Cavs were losing, whatever it might be, but he just took the ball instead of inbounding it to his teammate, he threw it to the other team, literally on purpose. And you can easily find a clip of it, and it just, a lot of people in Cleveland were like, we're done with this guy. So, you know, he was all in when we were winning and stuff. And he needs to be that. Cavs are a very young team, and they're, you know, they have a lot of nice pieces, but he needs to be sort of the guy that is the leader in the clubhouse, the, you know, sort of the player coach sort of thing, right, that these guys can look up to. And unfortunately, that's kind of what rubbed me the wrong way with him.
I knew so, there was going to be a story to it because he was beloved for a while.
Yeah, no, and I mean, I'll never forget what he did in 2016, but I think he's got one of the most notoriously bad contracts in the NBA too. So I would not be surprised to see the Cavs try to maybe move him, try to maybe move Colin Sexton in the off season to try to bring in some more talent and or maybe, you know, just change things up a little bit. So the NBA draft's only a couple weeks away. We'll see how
bad for the Cavs or bad for him. It's notoriously bad. Overweighted, like it costs too much.
Like he makes for the Cavs. For him, not bad. Not bad. Especially when you're making, like, you know, if he's playing 25 games and making $30 million a year, that's pretty solid.
Yeah.
The Cavs, though, I mean, Dan Gilbert, I think, is the third richest owner in all of sports, which is insane to own the Cavs. He's like worth like almost $60 billion, I think. So, you know, I know that Ballmer, I think he owns Boeing, and I'm not sure who the other one is. But yeah, Dan Gilbert's right up there. He owns, like, you know, Quicken Loans and all that stuff. So he's got the money and he's not afraid to spend it. So nothing against Dan Gilbert, but we need to get Kevin Love probably. It might be good for him too, you know, change of scenery,
right,
whatever it might be too.
Somebody will pick him up.
He might play. Yeah. So we'll see how that goes. All right. We are going to play a little, if I can find it. Lucas showed me, of course, where it was, and now I can't find it. Oh. Sorry. Is that coming up?
But the first thing
All right, here. We'll play that in a minute. So I think I messed it up here. So anyway, all right.
Do you need Lucas help off?
Yeah, Lucas.
Hey, Lucas.
Lucas, you mind coming up here? I screwed this up. Lucas did all this hard work behind the scenes, and I screwed up my one job I had. Look at this. It's playing again. So I wanted to get that to play and it went full screen on me. So my bad. So technical difficulties live on air, nothing wrong with that. So anyway, we're going to play this ad read here. And then when we come back, we'll talk a little Major League Baseball. I'll get out of your way. So.
Hey, everybody. This is Justin of the 330 Sports Show. First, wanted to talk to you a little bit about this show and a little bit about our network. But the first thing I want to take just a second to say is thank you. Our network and our show continues to grow show by show, week by week. And that's thanks to you guys, our listeners. Without you guys, we don't have a show. We don't have a network. And I just wanted to, again, say thank you. We appreciate you. As you know, my show, you can watch each Tuesday and Thursday live at 1 p.m. You can always watch on demand anytime through the Youngstown Studio page. You can follow my show at 330 Sports Show. You can follow the Youngstown Studio page at Youngstown Studio. We are on, you know, all the social media platforms. We're on Facebook. We're on YouTube. We're on Twitter. We're on Instagram. So look for us there. Follow us. And if you like what you're hearing, subscribe and get notifications. You feel free to rate our shows. It really helps our network grow. Also, besides my show, we have a ton of great content on the network. We just surpassed 500 here in early July, 500 podcasts on our episodes or featured on our website. You can check that out at youngstownstudio.com. But some of the other shows we feature are Homes and Hops with Lisa Resnick, The Influencer Show, The Fast Freddy Show, The Joe and Doug Show. We have a political show, Turning Red. Mo Ray has joined us on some of our podcasts. We have a recovery show, Nostradamus. Pretty much everything under the, you know, under the sky we talk about down here. So you're going to find something on our network that is going to interest you. So make sure to give us a chance and a like and subscribe. I really think you'll find something that interests you or someone else that you can always share word of mouth. Also, just wanted to remind you, make sure to follow at 330 Sports Show, because I publish a lot of content that might not necessarily make it onto the show, but that might be interesting, whether it's local sports, regional sports, or national sports stories. So again, we appreciate our audience and your continued support of our programming. Anytime a show is open or live, I should say, our phone lines will be open, 330-595-1600, or simply comment on the platform you're watching. We love to engage. We love to hear from our audience and our listeners, and we, again, appreciate you all. We reach over 20,000 viewers per month, and which, you know, puts us roughly over 5,000 per week, if not more, with our shows, our content. So continue to listen, continue to watch, and share it out again, like I said, with anyone that might be interested. We appreciate you guys. Now we'll get back to the show.
All right. Thanks, guys, for putting up with my little technical difficulty there. Let's get back to some baseball stuff here. So this past week, we had the Major League Baseball All-Star Game. Pretty, you know, just that time, the halfway point of the season, halfway through the summer, a little bit past the 81 game point. But obviously, the American League, National League was sorely missed last year. It's just a big, you know, the Midsummer Classic, sort of what it's known as. But the American League defeated the National League 5-2. They were, I will say, my cousin Doug and I did a show before last week about our best NBA uniforms. But last week, the Major League Baseball, I got to say, these uniforms were awful that they were wearing, these American League, National League. You know, just have the teams wear their home or road uniforms in the All-Star game. It just looks better. But, you know, that's just my hot take on that. So, yeah, have them wear the home whites or the road grays. Just, you know, it's just classic, and I think it looks better. In this game, Vlad Guerrero became the youngest All-Star Game MVP, and Shohei Ohtani, who we're going to talk about here in just a minute, was the winning pitcher. Now, a kind of a fun fact that I read this past weekend: Cedric Mullins for the Baltimore Orioles. He was a bench player in high school. He didn't start until his senior year. He went to junior college. He's only 5'8" tall, And tonight, or well, Tuesday night, he started in center field for the American League All-Stars. So pretty cool there. I thought that was worth noting because, you know, it doesn't quite matter where you start. It's where you finish. And he's kind of someone that at 5'8", maybe you don't look up to physically, but, you know, you look up to as a sorry, Joe. I thought that was funny.
But I'll tell you, we love our underdog stories. Those are the best.
Yeah. No, I mean, and a guy like him, and I even saw, like, you know, he's a possible guy the Indians have on their radar to bring in because he has been such an impact player this year for them. So, you know, just a cool story there to go from not even starting high school baseball to starting, you know, being one of the 9 best players in the American League. All right. Let's talk a little bit about the Home Run Derby. This was really cool. So Pete Alonso of the Mets won the Home Run Derby on Monday night. He defeated Trey Mancini in the finals, also of the Baltimore Orioles. Mancini was kind of a cool story because he, you know, had battled cancer and got all the way back to the major leagues and, you know, obviously did very well in this contest. So I thought that was just a kind of a cool story to note. Juan Soto of the Nationals hit the longest home run at 520 feet. The air's a little bit thinner out there in Colorado, but to hit the ball 520 feet, I don't care if you're hitting it in Colorado, New York, Washington, D.C., the North Pole.
Is
it
gone in every stadium? Like there isn't.
Yeah. I think the furthest, I would think most stadiums, probably the furthest points, 410, 405.
Yeah, so that's gone everywhere.
You know, and that's dead center too. So, Joe, I wanted to pull up this image, this next image. This is awesome. But here is Pete Alonso's, you got to give a shout out to his pitcher. So the pitcher is David, and forgive me if I, you know, butcher the name, but Joss, I believe. So he was the pitcher for him in the Home Run Derby. Look at that strike chart. Dead down the middle, nearly every pitch. So just that makes a huge, huge impact to a hitter when they know what they're getting. And Pete Alonso, if you were watching him, he's a little bit cocky. He's a little bit arrogant in certain ways, but it's pretty cool to, you know, if you're just that good at hitting a ball that far, there's no right or wrong with being cocky, especially in that situation. I just thought that was really cool. And then one more Pete Alonso note. He's still a very young player. He actually makes the league minimum, which is still $575,000 or so. But for this, he donated 50,000 of his Derby winnings to the Wounded Warrior Project and another 50,000 to 9/11 first responders. Now, this is a guy that could easily just take this paycheck and say, hey, you know, I live in New York City. I have a healthy rent to pay. You know, I you got other needs and stuff, but, for him to, you know, step up and donate. He did the same thing when he won in Cleveland 2 years ago. So good for him. Just sounds like a good dude. And, you know, congratulations to him on winning. And I'm sure he'll be back next year to defend his title. Now, kind of the main star of the stars this past weekend or earlier in the week was Shohei Ohtani. We've talked about him on the show before, but I want to just share with you a few images and a few things that make this special. So the very first one, in the first round of the Home Run Derby, he hit 28 home runs. He still lost. Dude, he had 28 home runs in the Home Run Derby. He had a 513-foot home run. He batted leadoff in the All-Star game. He started the All-Star game as a pitcher. Threw a 100.2 mile per hour fastball. He pitched one inning, gave up no runs, no hits. And again, he earned the win as the pitcher for the American League. So just a pretty amazing stat there for Shohei Ohtani.
See that? I just was curious to see the Babe Ruth hit the longest home run at 575. I wanted to see how close we were.
575 feet. And that, you know, and that's back in the day when pitchers probably didn't throw quite as hard. The, you know, the equipment and stuff isn't, but you know, we might have to trust the measurement on that. You know, maybe it was a little longer, maybe it wasn't quite as long, but you always hear those like classic stories of him like pointing to the bleachers in Chicago and all that stuff. So calling a shot. So that's pretty awesome. I want to share one more image about Shohei Ohtani and actually compare it with Babe Ruth. So that's a nice transition, but we're going to compare their pitching and hitting statistics. So this is through 77 games. They're each playing 77 games. Shohei Ohtani had pitched 11 games and had a 2.5 ERA. Through 11 starts, Babe Ruth had a 3.56 ERA. Shohei Ohtani threw 59 and one-third inning pitched. Babe Ruth had thrown 91 innings. Here's where it really is crazy. Shohei Ohtani has struck out 82 batters and only walked 31. Babe Ruth had, again, through 11 games, had only 14 strikeouts and walked 47 batters. So he was a little bit wild. And then their hitting statistics, which is pretty wild, too. So in nearly 300 plate appearances each, Shohei Ohtani has a .277 batting average, 25 home runs, and a .688 slugging percentage. Babe Ruth had a little bit higher of a batting average at .315, but 10 less home runs, only 15 home runs for Babe Ruth, and a .619 slugging percentage. So what Shohei Ohtani is doing this year is just an absolute freak show, basically. You know, just an absolute amazing season for a player stepping into his own. So just pretty cool right there with what he's doing. And I thought that was worth sharing.
All right. Another statistic here. So let's see. Houston used to have the deepest center field at 436 feet. They shortened it and now it's at 409. So now Detroit has 420 at center field. So
okay. The deepest field is 420. And you know what? I remember in Houston, I think it was Minute Maid Park it used to be called Enron Field, and we know how that went, but it became Minute Maid Park. They actually used to have a flagpole on the field in center field, like deep, 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 and they had this big hill. So I think what they did is put the fence in front of that hill and maybe put that flagpole behind, obviously for safety reasons as well there too. But so 420 feet.
420. You said? If you ever get the Trivia Pursuit question of what's the furthest distance for the center field, we got Detroit Comerica Park.
And you know what? If they legalize marijuana in Detroit or Michigan, that's a great sponsor right there next to the 420 sign. So that'd be kind of cool right there. Yep. So free CBD oil or whatever it might be if you hit the 420 sign, something like that.
Yep.
All right. Real quick look at the Major League Baseball leaders at the break. Batting average leaders, Vlad Guerrero, .332. Nick Castellanos for the Reds, .331. And Adam Frazier for the Pittsburgh Pirates at .330. Home runs, Ohtani has, as I mentioned, 33 home runs at the break. Vladimir Guerrero, 28. And Fernando Tatis Jr., with 28 as well, which makes me feel old because I remember Vladimir Guerrero Sr. and Fernando Tatis being baseball players kind of during my youth. So I was probably about the same age as these guys are now when their dads were playing, which is kind of crazy. The major league leader in RBIs, Vlad Guerrero, 73, Rafael Devers of the Red Sox, 72, and Ohtani up there again at 70. Leaders in hits, Frazier of Pittsburgh, 115, Castellanos of the Reds, 111, Trey Turner of the Nationals, 110, and Cedric Mullins, who we mentioned, did not even start high school baseball until his senior year, has 106 hits at the All-Star break. Steals, Whit Merrifield of the Royals, 24, Fernando Tatis with 20, and Trey Turner with 19. Those are the hitting leaders. And real quick onto the pitching stats, just four main stats we're going to focus on here. Wins, you got Hendricks of the Cubs with 11, Urias of the Dodgers at 10, Chris Bassett of Oakland with 10, Anthony DeSclafani of San Francisco, sorry if I pronounced that name wrong, with 10, and Aaron Civale of the Indians, who's been out for a couple weeks with that broken finger in his pitching hand, with 10 wins as well. ERA, Jacob DeGrom is going to win this hands down unless he just absolutely implodes. But he right now is averaging his ERA is 1.08, which is unheard of, absolutely unheard of. That basically means he's given up one run per nine innings. The American League leader is Lance Lynn, who his ERA is great, but still almost double what DeGrom's is at 1.99. Saves leader, San Diego, Mark Melancon, former Pittsburgh Pirate, with the Padres now at 27. Liam Hendricks leads the American League with 23. He is of the Chicago White Sox. Strikeout leaders, Garrett Cole, 147, Jacob DeGrom, 146, both New York pitchers, Zach Wheeler of the Philadelphia Phillies, 145, and Shane Bieber, I looked into this, I was just curious what he has. He's still sitting at ninth place overall in the entire major league, and he's missed over a month of baseball, so pretty cool there for him. Joe, we've talked about this on the show before, but the Indians obviously are going to be changing their name soon. Do you have any favorites or thoughts on what the Cleveland Indians or Cleveland baseball team should be called going forward?
I don't really have an opinion, but I think the Spiders is probably going to win out.
Okay.
That's my guess. Right.
Now, that's really funny you say that, because this past weekend, there were some rumors on Twitter that I saw, and I saw the same thing anyone else saw, so I'm not reporting anything breaking or anything, but a lot of people have reported it's down to two, and it's the Guardians and the Spiders.
Okay.
So I think if I had to pick one of those two, this isn't my opinion, this is who I think's going to win. I would think the Guardians. Here's why. Because I think it's less polarizing. I think people that love the Spiders love the Spiders. And I think people that don't like the Spiders don't like the Spiders. You know what I mean? Right. So it's kind of,
well, Guardians like soccer. Like that feels like a guard the goal, you know?
Yeah. No, I agree.
They gotta play the brand of and make the connection exactly. If they're gonna go that route.
I'm still in the camp of like Blues or Grays or something like that, but or just the Cleveland Baseball Club. I think that's kind of cool. That, again, some people might think that's lame, whatever. I'm not exactly sure. Once we know more, why do you like the Spiders?
It's not necessarily that I like it. I've heard the most about it, and it seems like that's the one that keeps rising to the top. So that's most likely. Sports, it's not a real big deal to me, honestly.
Yeah.
Now, if the Browns change to something, I might have a say in it. But
right. Yeah, I think the big deal for fans, at least, is, in a year after they change their name or 5 years, no one really is going to care. The remember. Only thing is, and that, like, the old, get off my lawn, type people are going to be like, well, they're still the Indians to me. And like, nobody cares. It's like at the end of the day, they're the baseball team you root for in the city that you root for.
Well, I still refer to Jacobs Field. Okay.
So yeah, that's exactly. Me right there. Exactly. Yeah. It's still the Jake. So no, that's okay. But the Spiders, like I said, I guess I'm kind of indifferent on it, but the one thing I do like that you can do is you can kind of like do a lot with the logo. You can kind of make it cool. You can call there's just a lot of different ways. The web, that you can call the stadium the web or something like that. There's just a lot of cool different things I think you can do with that maybe type mascot. Whereas the Guardians, we all know there's that bridge sort of, I don't know if it's 480 or what bridge it is, but there's the Guardians of Cleveland. And they're these two really big statues. They're pretty awesome on that bridge that's right overlooking the baseball field. So I think that's kind of grown in popularity because of that. But again,
they could tie it in with Guardians of the Galaxy because those have some characters on
it. And again, some people are going to be really think that's cool. Some people are going to be like,
no matter what, everybody's going to be pissed off. No matter what.
Exactly. It's just like anything else. You can't make everybody happy. So why try?
If you're gonna do it, piss everybody off.
Exactly. Yeah. Just the Cleveland middle finger.
Yes.
The Cleveland middle finger. So you don't like it, we're number
Screw
one.
Screw you. We don't care.
I love it. So with a couple more things I want to bring up before we end the show here. We'll get to that one in a minute. Sorry, no, you're all right. I pulled the trigger earlier on that. In the NFL, we're gonna have a lot of NFL talk very, very soon because we're about two and a half weeks from training camp, which is insane to me. You know, we're in the middle point of July, so it's coming up. Baker's contract extension is going to be something to keep an eye on. Who's going to get signed first is kind of a big issue in the NFL between Baker Mayfield, Lamar Jackson of the Ravens, or Josh Allen of the Bills. Also, something to keep an eye on, will the Browns sign Nick Chubb? Will the Browns sign Denzel Ward? Wyatt Teller also nearing a contract extension. So something to keep an eye on there. We'll talk a ton of NFL in the next couple weeks as we get closer to the start of training camp and the season. We are 49 days away, 7 weeks from tonight, until Ohio State kicks off their season against the Minnesota Golden Gophers in Minneapolis.
And you are decked out, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Ohio State, what the hell, that's good looking. Yeah, I have a couple things was just going to say about the Buckeyes, but this was around, it was comfortable, so I threw it on. This state up north still sucks. It has been 3,519 days since Michigan last beat Ohio State on the football field. So nice. Just wanted to throw out that quick reminder. I will put that image up there now. Now, Joe, that name, image, and likeness that we talked about before has brought up some sort of old bad news of Ohio State. So if you remember 2010, I believe this first came out. So to catch everybody up real quick, name and image and likeness, guys can profit off their likeness. They can profit off, they can go to a car dealership. You know, the only thing they can't do, they can't wear this shirt and make money off of it. They can't wear this hat and make money off of it. But they can say, hey, I'm a player for Ohio State, blah, 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 this and that. I can, you know, they can make money off of that. They can go to a football camp. They can make money off of that. They can advertise for t-shirt company, whatever, gaming company. They can send out tweets, Instagram, whatever it might be. Those companies can pay them. Now, this would be something that would be 100% legal now, that was not legal back then. When Ohio State players, Terrell Pryor, everybody remembers Terrell Pryor, Devere Posey, great wide receiver, Solomon Thomas, Mike Adams, and Daniel Boom Heron. Daniel Boom Heron is from right here in Warren, Ohio. Now, those guys were sort of the five from the tattoo gate that happened way back when. Cost Jim Tressel his job. And again, Tressel, I don't believe, did anything wrong. So, Joe, if we could put this on the screen here.
Sure.
I just want to read a snippet of this. But the affirmation of NCAA athletes' right to make a living from their name, image, and likeness is a huge step in the right direction. Armed with the correct resources and support, we know that they'll show what felt to be true all along. Not letting athletes capitalize on what ultimately is their hard work was unjust and unnecessary. So what these guys are asking for, they're calling for all the school records during any game that those five played in were pulled. So it's like they didn't even count. So they want those games restored, those wins restored for Ohio State history. They also basically are just like saying, hey, give Ohio State back, give us our, you know, don't disrespect us. So all these guys did was literally, remember we talked about those gold pants that they get from the little, from beating Michigan, this basically a little trinket, and they gave those away to this tattoo artist, and that guy in turn just gave them free tattoos. So that is an NCAA violation at the time. Now that would be deemed legal. So all they're saying is, hey, just right the wrong, you know, okay, yeah, you know, and I could see people falling on both sides of the fence of this. It was illegal when they did it. So technically they broke the rules. But it's not illegal now. So it's one of those things. It's like, hey, you know, this wasn't a big deal. You know, they didn't murder somebody. They didn't, you know, get in trouble. They didn't get in a fight. They didn't do this or that, but you know, they got tattoos for trading it for something that they actually owned. You know what I'm saying? Right. So I think personally, now I'm obviously wearing the Ohio State shirt hat. I'm a little biased, but it would be nice. So in 2010, Ohio State went 12-1, won the Big Ten championship, won the Sugar Bowl. And, you know, that was like, it's like that season never happened because of these five tattoos that they earned. So what do you think on that?
It's a rough one because, you know, it was what you said is it was illegal at the time, and the NCAA, they wanted to buckle down so not more of it happened. So they did an overreaction. So it was a tool in their arsenal. But then again, you know, I think it was extreme for those kids. I mean, mm-hmm. careers dashed and whatever. So,
and I mean, even it's look a tough at one. The only thing we can say, maybe a silver lining, is that we got Jim Tressel here at Youngstown State now as the president, but that cost him his coaching career. Sure, right. That cost him his coaching career. They put what's called a no-show clause on him, that he wasn't able to coach for 5 years or something like that because of this, when he was just basically protecting his players. So to me, it's kind of that, like you said, it's a tough situation, but I think restore the records, restore you know, the victories, and we'll go from there. Yep. Just a couple other little notes here. Ohio University football coach Frank Solich, yesterday retired for health reasons, and he was getting up there. He's 77, but he's the winningest coach in MAC history, former coach at Nebraska as well. So congratulations on retirement to Frank Solich. Wish him well with his health and, you know, well-being. So good luck to Frank Solich in his next chapter. Currently right now, the PGA Tour is at the British Open. They just call it the Open, at Royal St. George, which is in Kent, England. John Rahm is the betting favorite. They are well ahead of us time-wise. So this teed off early this morning. So, you know, you got a bunch of guys already in the clubhouse. The leader was at -6 at my last check. So we'll check in and, see who won that on next show. But, as I mentioned, John Rahm was the betting favorite. It looks like Jordan Spieth had a nice day. Ustation, is at -6, and a couple other, familiar names up there on the leaderboard. So we'll see how that plays out. And one final note, before we close the show, the Tokyo Olympics too. We mentioned that earlier with Team USA. It's about to begin in 8 days. So the opening ceremonies are in 8 days from today. Tokyo, though, currently has their highest surge in COVID cases in the last 6 months. So something to keep an eye on there with athletes. I think they're limiting attendance. But it's going to be very, very, very interesting to see what happens over the next couple weeks in Tokyo to see if things get canceled or whatever. So, I don't know. Anything that you look forward to in the Olympics, Joe?
No, I was just thinking about that. Like I can remember as a kid really looking forward to it. Now you said that there are time differences. Most of the main events are going to happen in the morning.
I think so, but sometimes they do like tape delays and you kind of know. I don't like that either.
Wake up in the morning, I look at the medal count. That was my favorite thing, watching the medal count.
Exactly. Yeah. So it'll be cool to see. With the time difference, I'm sure they'll play the big events live, but you know, there's some gymnastics and swimming and basketball. Those are all, you know, they'll put those in prime time too. So you might see the score or the results early, and then
I don't want to watch the actual event.
Yeah, exactly. So,
but some of those more obscure type of events are kind of cool, like the marksmanship ones. Those are kind of neat to watch. Mm-hmm.
That was going to be possible topic for my top five Tuesday. Favorite obscure Olympic sport.
Really?
So I'm gonna do a little bit of research this weekend and see what I can dig into and find there.
It's like the
weekend.
Guinness Book of World Records, where that you can go find an event and be an Olympian because they have some weird
power walking. I think power walking used to be one.
I can totally do that.
That might be on my top five list. We'll see. We'll go find somebody at the Southern Park Mall. Or Eastwood Mall. Maybe
on the Ocho, we got darts and power walking,
cornhole. You know, I don't think that's quite. And believe me, I am not. Downgrading any of these Olympic athletes because they are unbelievable. But some of those sports that are obscure are very interesting. So I'll look into that this weekend, have some more info on that for you guys on Tuesday. So everybody enjoy your weekend. We will talk to you soon.
Thank you for listening to this show on Youngstown Studio. If you like our programming, we invite you to subscribe to our YouTube channel, follow our Facebook page, or subscribe to your favorite podcast platform like iTunes or Spotify. This is original Youngstown content, and we would appreciate you sharing the videos and the word about us. Thank you.